And then you speak to like the Muggle people, and they don't get it. You're in your car and you're like, do you want to hear this project I've been working on for 2 years that I like spilled my guts out? And they're just like, yeah, this is cool. And I'm like, it's cool? That's it?
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. My name is Matt Landry, and in the 60th episode, I'm here with Cindy. Throughout the podcast, we discuss her artist project, her upcoming EP, going between session musician and front person, influences in writing, characters and storytelling, being a woman in the industry, her origin story, her villain origin story, maybe. We also play the Dream Fest game. Thanks for listening.
What up?
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast, a platform that allows us to learn more about the music industry through conversations with artists, people in the behind the scenes, music business individuals, creatives, and much more. This podcast is brought to you by AITS, a musical direction and playback company out of Toronto. Our goal with this podcast is to create a network and shine a light on all the stuff that is happening in the music world, such as topics and realities that are gatekept, and the people and roles that may often be overlooked. This week, I have the immense pleasure of welcoming Cindy to the podcast. She is an artist, musician, writer, multi-instrumentalist, co-founder of the new Spooky Action Records, and honestly, a lot more. I met Cindy through session playing for other artists in Toronto. Shout out Chris Gray. But we haven't spoken in a while, so I'm stoked to be able to chat with her today. So please welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast, Cindy. Hi, how are you?
Hi.
This is that's the cue.
Yeah, I was sitting here just like, oh my God, when is it my turn? Hello. Anyway, sorry, that was really annoying. What is good, man? It's been so long.
It has been a very long time. Let's start the podcast how we always start the podcast. As with your favorite live show experience as a fan ever.
As a fan? Oh, you're going to get to hear so much about this. Green Day all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. They are every live show to me. Like their Bullet in the Bible DVD, I worship that as a child. Everything that I do on stage is like based off of that like energy. Unreal. Anyway, that's
that DVD actually was mentioned a few weeks ago on the podcast.
Really? I'm telling you.
As being like a huge reference. And I feel bad because I don't really know that DVD, so I'm gonna have to check it out at some point.
Oh, I skipped grade 8. Like I skipped school to go to HMV and buy this.
Yeah.
And
it
it's called Bullet in the Bible, but it became my actual Bible. And everything that I did in music was like based off of this. And then when I saw them live for the first time, it blew my brains. I was like, I'm not one to get starstruck or anything by people, but I turned into like a 12-year-old girl at a Bieber show. Like it was crazy. Anyway, highly recommend. Big Green Day fan.
How long ago was that first show that you were at?
I was maybe like 16, I think.
Right.
Pretty late in the game. I think it was like 15, 16 or something.
Okay, so you turn into your 12-year-old self.
Yeah, I just reverted back. I was like, no, I'm a child at the mall meeting Bieber right now.
Yeah.
And it was stunning. It was just so good. I remember one show that I've seen them like over 10 times.
Oh,
but
wow.
I remember one they played at, it was the Molson at the time, now the Budweiser. And it was 3 hours long and they played these deep cuts from before, like from like the, like, 1990 and like things off of their like 7-inch EPs and shit, and I was like, yo, like I can't believe I'm hearing these live, and they are so, it's just so much more magical. I don't even have like words for it, so I can't. They're coming back and I'm so excited. It's gonna be like in August, and again I'm gonna cry like a baby, but I'm in my 30s now, so it's a little weirder.
Are they at Budweiser stage?
I think it's Rogers.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, okay, we're there now.
Okay, yeah. My reference for Green Day is completely
No, it's not. Totally fine. That was like when I saw them at Budweiser, it was like 2009. So yeah, anyway, it's gonna be a blast. I'm super stoked. And Rancid's playing. Like, whoever thought that Rancid was gonna play the Rogers Center? Like that's a little left of center, but it's pretty cool. They played like 934 Gilman together, that like really legendary punk venue in Oakland. So it's kind of cool that they went from that to the Rogers Center. Like, that's insane.
Insane. Fantastic. Well, I need to check out some more Green Day. The second question, is there a project, campaign, era that would best represent your work for those that don't know your work?
What's coming out right now?
Yes.
I'm so excited. I was in a lot of hard rock bands as a kid. And I've, through my own artist project now, I've explored more like pop and a bunch of different things. Now, they are versions of me, but they aren't like the pinnacle, I guess, best description of who I am and what I am. But now, I like, for this project, I was like, fuck it, yo. Like, I want to make like heavy music. This is what I used to do growing up. And we're going to be like the most authentic version, even if it fucking scares people. I don't give a shit. And like, it really feels good when people, you know, when I'm out in public and my friends are like, just kind of hyping me up and going like, oh my God, you got to listen to her shit. Da, da, da. I feel really proud of it now. I'm like, yeah, you do got to listen to this shit. Cause I spent two years in the dirt, like making this and creating this big work of art with my, like, visually and audio, like with audio as well. With some of my best friends. And so I'm really proud of it. And I'm looking forward to rolling it out. We have one single out right now, Victim. Mm-hmm. And the next one's coming soon. And yeah, we'll talk more about that, but I'm really excited.
Yeah. I love it when the answer to this question is what's coming out right now or what's up next, because, you know, there's so much like anticipation and so much excitement for what's happening right now and what's up next. So please, people, just check out the single, yes, Victim. But we're also going to be talking about your next single, Villain Origin Story. Yes, exactly. Fantastic. The second question, or the third question, rather, we normally go into is the quote question. Last year, it was the Erykah Badu question, which compared the music business to the music art form. This year it's the Joni Mitchell quote, which is, I heard someone from the music business saying they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. This is from an interview with Robert Hilburn in 2004, a writer from the LA Times. What are your first instincts when you hear that, this quote, and I'll repeat it again. I heard someone from the music business saying they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. What do you think about that?
It's true. It's so true. And that's one of the reasons why I started my own label with two of my best friends, Alex Biro and Mike Tikar. We run Spooky Action Records together. And it's because I realized like a lot of the deals that were getting thrown my way when I was initially like pitching this project to people, it took a big chunk of my money, and I know how to do a lot of this stuff from like my previous work experience. So I didn't really think it was valuable. And I love working with artists. Aside from my own career, I want to build other careers. And it's a lot more inspiring for me working with someone who has their own vision. Like it's a way bigger, I don't know, like musical turn on, if that's the right
word. Sure, sure, yeah.
Yeah, just like they get it. They have a vision. They're not going to like settle for anything less. And you're just there to like enhance what that is, as opposed to sitting someone down and being like, hey, you got a cool voice. You got a cool look. Let's beef this up a little bit. Let's make it, I don't know, just, I guess, more palatable for people. I'm not in the business of palatable. I like the unique nuances of a person and what makes them special, because everything's kind of cookie cutter anyway. So we need something that kind of sticks out. And that's, So I do believe it's true, but that's one of the reasons why I started a label, was to, work with people and encourage, people who aren't like that, who actually do have their own vision and things like that.
Yeah. You said something a few moments ago saying that, like, artists that have their own vision, kind of thing. By that,
like their own ideas.
Their own ideas, and not influenced by less sort of people that they were previously, or the affiliations that they had previously. Is that sort of?
Yeah, or like this artist is popping off, so we're gonna make you another version of this artist. Why do we want that? If I wanted to listen to like I don't know. I remember when The Weeknd was like first coming out, it was like 2011 or something. And then everyone for like 3 or 4 years started making like Weeknd type beats. And it's like, brother, if I wanted to listen to that, I would just fucking play The Weeknd. Like, give me something else. And yeah. So I enjoy when someone's actually taking the time beyond the fact that they know how to sing, beyond the fact that they know how to play an instrument, but they have an idea or a concept that they really want to flush out. I love working with that. That's the coolest shit for me.
Yeah. You also mentioned your previous experiences, you know, not only as an artist or a musician, but also just your job experiences. I wanted to mention you were working at XO in the beginning.
Yeah, it was for like
the weekend as well.
Yeah. It was the management company, Sal & Co, like through XO. And I was a project manager for Belly. I also had 11 other producers and songwriters that I took care of at the same time. So yeah. I did that for like 4 years. It's not something like I'm really inspired by it. And it taught me everything I need to know to be able to do this. It's not really something that I speak on often anymore. So like, thanks for asking. it feels like a lifetime ago.
Sure. I guess my main question is like, are you taking some influences from your experiences at EXO for the record company?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the way that we used to run things, like there were methods that really worked.
Yeah.
And there were things that really didn't. And sure. I spent a long time just building my own artist career, like all label stuff aside, having a lot of time to think about that and process what that meant and how I wanted to proceed going back into music on my own with my own company and my own everything. How do we want to go about this? And so it allowed me to make a lot more informed decisions. And at the end of the day, I got to learn and make mistakes through somebody else's career. I hate to say it like that.
Sure. Yeah, no.
But it just frankly, like if you're when you're managing someone else, I wasn't the direct manager, but I was on the team.
Yep.
But when you're working there and then you get to see what works and what doesn't, man, does that save you a lot of money later on when you decide to kind of fucking do it on your own.
Oh, yeah.
I just have a lot more internal perspective on the preparation that you need to be able to do this successfully. I spent the majority of 2023, building the label with the boys, building catalog, and then also creating the assets to market what I'm doing now.
Yep.
So I don't have to, like, I have a PR person. I have my like label team. I have management representation. And so now all the pieces are kind of like fitting. I couldn't do it all, but I really wanted to trust. I wanted to like, I don't know, just figure out how to do it with people that I really fuck with that actually, you know, make me feel good. Make me feel like that, like I'm working on something bigger than myself. So it's been pretty neat. I feel like it's just so much faster and so much more streamlined, like as opposed to when I was starting with EXO in my early 20s. I feel like it's almost the same, but I'm like a whole new level and a whole new version of myself. So I'm able to handle a lot of these things and just see similarities like, oh, I've done this before. Oh, yeah. I've encountered this issue before. And I just can work through it so much faster. So I get a lot more done. But anyway, sorry, I'm like tangenting right now.
No, it's perfect. Honestly, I see myself in that, in your process in regards to, yes, my previous experiences in the music and cultural industries, but also just doing this podcast. I've been thinking, this is a podcast premiere, but I've been thinking about eventually doing an artist project, and it's just like even just through these conversations and these 60 episodes of this podcast that I'm learning through other people and what they've done, and like you said, their mistakes and their successes, and sort of learning through that.
You get to pick up so much information from this. This is like unreal.
Yeah.
Like this is an encyclopedia of info, 60 episodes worth of different industry professionals.
Yeah.
I feel that. And it's so smart. Like gather, man, we need to absorb.
There's
different ways to do it too. Like it's not, you know, we're not limited. Just because I learned how to do something one way 10 years ago doesn't mean it's the right answer now.
Yes.
And you have to be open to that.
And even now with different perspectives, just because one artist did it this way, doesn't mean that it's going to work for this artist. And we're seeing that on TikTok.
100%. Like, this copy paste doesn't work for everybody, and it's okay. Like, please don't copy paste yourself.
Yeah. More on the music industry and you know, and the current state of it. Where do you think it's going? So, like the future of music business, but also just music.
That's such a scary question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm going to speak from like the part of me that has faith.
Yeah.
Because obviously we've seen the introduction of like AI in creative spaces. We've seen, which like honestly can be used as an asset.
Yeah.
I've been in sessions where I'm writing for another artist and I'm sitting there thinking like, would they actually sing this? I don't know. And then we have the technology to find this exact person's voice and then put it on the record and manipulate it so the top line actually sounds like this person. And you get a way better inclination of like what this would really sound like. It gives you, it's a new way to gain information. Now, is it going to be the way to create in future? No, I don't think so. Like, I think the most beautiful things come from the human experience. And I don't think anything mechanical or any technology could beat that.
Yeah.
Excuse all my buts and ums. I'm like really, really cognizant of them right now. Holy
no, no, you're good. You're good.
Yeah, I think we want raw. I think we're over that phase of the TikTok dances and the, you know, the hottest song, and this is gonna be the hottest song of the summer. Like, I don't fucking give a fuck. It's not. Why are you like, if it was the hottest song of the summer, you'd be able to fucking sing it and it would speak for itself. Like,
yes.
It's like, I'm over the era of people like explaining what they are versus just like being what they are. Cause the explanation gives me fuck all, actually. And yeah, I'm trying to embody that a lot more in my work. And I think people just got to lead and lead by example. And so that we can get to that era sooner. But I think people are looking for raw again and things that like lyrics that feel good and are about things that are real. And I love all these new perspectives, man. There's a lot of, one thing on TikTok is there's a lot of these like little Gen Z kids that are picking up guitars with beautiful voices. And some of them write from such an interesting perspective. I'm like, man, I've never heard something sung like you could sing a love song a thousand different fucking ways. But sometimes like you hear them say something or sing something in a way and it's like, man, I know what you're feeling. How come I couldn't articulate that? Like it's some of these new kids, I don't know if it's like just millions of years of life experience, like from previous lives or something that they're fucking bringing with them, but shit, sure. They got some pretty cool perspectives. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do outside of this algorithmic type art.
Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to, especially because I work primarily at the moment in the live music industry. I'd love to see some concerts that are attended by people that don't that know more than just one chorus at the end of the show, you know?
Like the Nickelback formula was it. Every part was a chorus. No matter if it was the verse or the pre or the bridge, every part had its own like catchy bit. And
yeah.
If they came out now, you could probably TikTok every chunk of their song. And it would go viral. And I think we need to go back to that. And sometimes artists know, this is another thing that I found too. Artists know that that's like their one part. So they'll repeat
yes.
several times in the song, or the song is just fucking that.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
clickbait. It's just, it's not even art anymore. Now it's just clickbait. Mm. And that's annoying. I want to feel something. I want to go through, like, I want to be transported to another world. Where's that stuff? Like synthscapes and just like beautiful guitar work. And it exists. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I think that's where music needs to go, in my opinion.
Fantastic. A few weeks ago, I had a few artists on, specifically Kara and Rob from Valley, just talking about just modern artistry and modern artists. And they felt... We talked a lot about like individualized artists now, and that artists have needed to become so self-promotional in regards to like their lives and their career are so based on their TikTok numbers and all their social media numbers and just the promotion. And I'd love to get your opinion on this from now a co-founding sort of hat for the label. in regards to so they basically, for some a little bit of context, they felt like their career, or they feel like their career and a lot of artists' career, are based on their TikTok numbers, but the label isn't giving them that help, or their marketing system or their processes have basically only been basically their marketing strategy is to do TikToks, but they can't help them do TikToks because it's so self-promotion.
That's a personal thing. Like
it's
like,
a personal thing. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You can maybe have like one or two people kind of helping you out if you want to make some like pretty elite tier content. But outside of that, that's all you. Unless they're coming at you with, unless like, you know, you got a weekly call and you're talking about different ideas or different, like they're the ones trend finding for you and stuff like, that's the only way that I see a label being able to do that kind of stuff. But they don't know what the fucking trends are. They're like 40-year-old white dudes. Like they would, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like you're not on TikTok. You're not like, I'd rather hire like a 16-year-old for that job, to be honest.
Yes.
I think that's where their value is in this modern world of marketing. In my opinion, I don't know, man, it's there's pros and cons to it all. Back in the day, you'd have to hire a marketing company and hope that you would get past the gatekeeping to be able to reach a certain form of media, whether it was like television or radio or whatever. And it required a lot of funding. So you'd have to go through a label to do that. So it was a lot of gatekeeping and a lot of money involved. If you wanted to do it single-handedly, you'd have to work your ass off at some fucking bunk job, make money, pay this marketing company or pay a PR company or whatever, an agency, and then have them work your stuff and not necessarily have the full control because they know what the red tape would be. They know what the regulations are for television or what works or what doesn't work. Like everything's based on their analytics and they're going to create a business model on that.
And their go as well.
Yeah. Yeah. They have their own bias. They have their own message that they need to deliver consistently throughout every single artist or every single public person. Whereas now it's free.
Yes.
You can do it anytime. Is it a lot more work for you personally? Yeah, because you gotta like, you know, turn the gears a little bit more. But is that necessarily a bad thing? No, like sometimes I get pissed off about it. Sometimes I'm like, no, man, I just want to fucking, like, most artists are introverted little shits. So we just want to be in our room in the dark and cry and play an instrument and then get it all out that way and then whatever.
Yeah.
Other people are very social and good at fan service and interaction and shit like that. I also think it's a cool thing to be able to get the introverted people to rip the band-aid a little bit more and try to
interesting.
Hone in on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Talk to people more, be a little bit more social, and maybe offers an opportunity for the people who are on the extroverted side to really focus on the introvertedness of their art and like what it means to actually spend time alone and create something that has impact. And if you can, as one person, capture both of these energies, I think you'll have a really well-rounded artist. I mean, then you also have to like pay bills and like own a house and like fucking get an oil change. And then like, there's so many things in like 24 hours you need to fucking do. I'm only saying that because I need an oil change. So like, it's a personal reminder, but anyways,
things.
I know being an adult is crazy. It's a lie. It's a trap. Don't fucking do it. So yeah, like there's all these things, but I think the fact that it's free and it's at our fingertips and we get to make those choices for ourselves and take those risks outside of another company mitigating those risks for you. I think you can get a little further faster now. And if we look at it that way and also make the content fun, it doesn't have to be like, check out my fucking talk. It doesn't have to be that. Like,
yeah, no, it's true.
We can have fun with it. It's supposed to be fun. It's music. It's like, it's entertainment. It's like, this is the kind of shit that like, when people are at their 9-to-5 jobs that they hate, they go to the bathroom and they want to have a doom scroll and like vape in the stall. Like you're providing the doom scroll. Make it good. Make it fun. So that's my perspective.
And it's great. And just to cap it off as well. And I'd love to sort of new, you know, your quick thoughts on this as well. But before, if we're comparing as well, it's the marketing agencies and the people, the media entities had control over what was pushed and what wasn't. And the success was deemed by that, and what was pushed, and because there were so many eyes on what was pushed, and it was way more controlled. I would say that now on TikTok, it's all user based. It's all, yes, there is an algorithm, yes, but your success is based on the likes of real people and the shares of real people. And I think it's just
It's
a
using real information. It's not like
yes.
we are going to push a narrative on you. It's there's
Exactly.
so many different narratives being shown and pushed. What works and what resonates and what speaks to the most people. And then they work with that and then create a framework that's larger that'll like, you know, I think that's how it goes. I don't, what am I, what do I know, man? Like that, like there could be a big shiny red button at TikTok. Like, I don't fucking know. But yeah, at the end of the day, I just have to put like my thing, no matter if I'm using PR or not, if I'm using a marketing agency or a creative agency or not, the content has to feel good and authentic to me. And I can't look at it in the present tense and cringe. That is my only rule for myself.
Fantastic. I heard, well, Leslie Feist last night on the Junos, night one, said that her manager, like early on, said that you're not necessarily working, like when you start your music career, you're not necessarily working for yourself right now because it'll be shitty. You're working for the person that you're going to be in 20 years.
Yeah, I
It's
said it
really,
before on
really
other.
interesting.
Yeah, I've said it before on like other podcasts and things that I've like spoken on. But it's like you do have to get the cringe out of the way early. You have to like you're gonna have to fail fast. Just get over it. Just get over it. It's gonna like things are gonna suck. Things are gonna cringe. Things are gonna like whatever. But you know what I mean? As long as the like as long as it taught you a lesson or it's teaching you something, so that the content that you're putting out in present tense feels authentic and not like you're doing a service to someone else, but like you're doing a service to you and that message speaks to someone else. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, brother.
Okay. What a segment to the pod. We're going to the second sort of segment, I guess third, whatever you want to call it. The origin story. Can you please, or maybe, well, the villain
The
origin story.
villain origin. Okay, no, I'm gonna stop that.
Can you give me a lowdown on where you grew up and your creative upbringing, family, friends, high school, things like that?
Yeah, I grew up on Ossington Bloor. Shout out,
Oh, yeah.
West End things. So I grew up there with my very Portuguese family. I lived with my mom, dad, my brother, and my grandparents. And my grandfather played guitar all across his island back home, and sound like he sung. He had a very powerful voice. Like that's where I get it from. And then my dad played guitar a lot growing up. We listened to a lot of Kiss, a lot of Motley Crue. And so there was always like 80s hair metal playing at home. And I was so into it. I was so obsessed with the look and the drama and the power of like of power chords, like straight the fuck up. I thought like it was this is the coolest sounding shit I've ever heard in my fucking life.
Nice.
Yeah, I was singing from a really young age. And when I was seven, I just kind of like I would be playing with toys and like freestyling. And I remember one day my dad caught me and I was like, oh my God, I was so embarrassed. But then I realized I'm like, I should probably write this stuff down because he thought it was good. So I don't know. I thought to start writing it down. And then I realized I needed a tool to be able to, I don't know, enhance my writing, like just like a like an instrument. I started playing steel drums when I was nine. That was my first instrument, obviously.
Oh,
Yeah, I was in a
okay.
steel drum band when I was nine.
Sick.
Fucking fire. But that wasn't really a tool that I could write with. So I picked up the guitar at 12 and I never put it down. And it's helped me so much. And when I learned how to like do drop D, I was like, yo, dude, like it was so sick. Everything just sounded cool. And like just being able to play all the songs that I listened to growing up, I just felt like the coolest fucking person. And I was a really quiet kid. Outside of the singing and all that kind of stuff. So it really allowed me to like express myself and build confidence. And I started playing shows when I was a kid at 12. I would get paid in $100 Feature Shop gift cards. And yeah, that shit was
That's sick.
crazy. Yeah. I remember one of those bought ATV Off-Road Fury, and that System of a Down was on that soundtrack. And that's how I found System of a Down. And that's like a whole other thing for me. Anyway, yeah. So like one thing led to another, and now I'm here, I guess. A lot, you know, lots of playing in hard rock bands, lots of emo shit, Lots of learning how to do eyeliner again and again and again, because I did it horribly every time prior. And it was just a whole vibe for me. It was cool. I dealt with a lot of there was a lot of bullshit at home, you know, like
sure.
There just was. So it helped me. I got to go to my room and learn something and feel accomplished. And yeah, again, it was the confidence thing, I think, that really helped.
I got to touch on something that you said about just like video game soundtracks.
Yeah.
Changed my life too, I gotta say. Like, I still remember some of the, like, the specifically for me, it was like the NHL 05 soundtrack with like Billy Talent.
So good. Like, are you kidding me?
Like mid 2000s, like rock soundtracks for like video games. Crazy.
Tony Hawk, American Wasteland. Sure, don't even talk about it. Don't even talk about it. That soundtrack is ridiculous. I discovered so much music from these things.
It
made a real impact as a kid. Like, video games were really a place of like, that's where I downloaded my personality.
Yeah.
Like, musically.
Shout out to one specific one is the SSX On Tour soundtrack. Literally changed my life, probably.
Okay, now I got to check that out because I don't know what that is even.
SSX is it's a snowboarding like skiing game, basically.
Sick.
Yeah, multiple like versions of it, and the On Tour one was so sick. It was like sort of like this like freestyle type of game where, and there's this like career storyline as well. But one of the best games ever, arguably.
Unreal. Okay, I'm gonna check it out.
My childhood best friend and I eventually want to get tattoos from that game as well. Anyway, it's like a whole thing, but
so
fucking sick.
That's how I felt about American Wasteland, like, because you get to skate through different parts of LA and Hollywood and shit like that.
I never went
as a kid, right? So when I got older and I was like out in LA for work, I remember going to the Santa Monica Pier, and that's one of the levels in the game, and I fucking jizzed my pants, dude. It was crazy. I felt like I was in this shit. I was just missing a board. It was so sick. I don't know. It's so cool when you go into the real version of a world that you saw digitally for so long.
So sick.
Fucking sick.
Do you remember like one thing, and you know, it might be the Green Day like DVD, but do you remember one thing that like changed your life, like when you were young? Like one, it could be either one show or one you know, conversation with somebody, or you met somebody that like really changed your
When I was a kid, like one of my first ones, sort of
kid, or even like a teenager playing some shows or something, the first Future Shop gift card, maybe, or
so many of those moments. I really think,
which is great.
There was one moment. I was like two, and I don't remember much from these times, but I remember like a few things. And I remember being like 2 years old and like watching the Grammys on TV. I don't even know who the fuck was on TV.
Right.
I just like blurted out, like, I'm going to go there. I don't know how I verbalized it, 'cause I was like two, so it probably sounded like shit, but I just remember like actually feeling and going like, I'm going to go there, and like pointing at the screen. And then like 22 years after that, I was there. And I was so dumbfounded and so just like, holy shit, I'm capable. I'm really capable of this. I mean, mind you, like, obviously it happened 22 years later, but it just showed me that like we are limitless to a degree. And I can do whatever. And also, like, yeah, I guess the Green Day stuff, anything Green Day related. I just thought he was so cool. And like just the way that he demanded an audience and demanded a crowd, but not in a controlling, like, evil way, like an inspiring way. Like, he made everyone feel good. Like, you left better than you came. And that was the coolest part about music, is like just being able to change people's lives that way. And so when I started incorporating almost some of the same techniques and the same sort of energy live in my own performances, I noticed it as a kid, like just the positive feedback I got back and how floored everyone was, and how they left going like, man, you made me want to do this. You made me want to learn this. You made me want to, I thought that was like the coolest shit. And now that I'm older, I've had people who are parents and their young kids talk to me and say like, my daughter started playing guitar because of you. Like, or she bought a little Squire pink Strat because you have a pink Strat. And I was like, wow, I remember those, like, I remember who inspired me to get my first guitar and stuff. Yeah. Like, and the fact that I'm doing that for someone else, that's crazy. And that's exactly why I want to do this. Like, it gave me an outlet to, like, save my own life. So if I could do that for someone else, super dope. That's it. Yeah, that's it all.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, I've had some of those moments recently, and they it's really, it just reminds you of why you really do it, you know.
Yeah.
It speaks to also, like, the importance of music in your life as well, because you'd want somebody to live through the experience that you've had with music.
So yeah, I love talking to people who are, like, in the field, and we have that, like, light in our eyes when we speak about projects or moments and live performance that, like, really spoke to us and stuff. And, like,
video games, yeah.
Yeah, the video games, dude. And then you speak to, like the muggle people, and they don't get it. Like, yeah. You're in your car and you're like, do you want to hear this project I've been working on for 2 years that I, like, spilled my guts out? And they're just like, yeah, this is cool. And I'm like, it's cool. That's it.
yeah.
That's all you have to say. Like, I fucking died on the inside for this. Yeah. And so, yeah, I live for those moments, and to be able to create that excitement for young kids who also feel immensely, who don't know how to get it out, who don't know how to emote, like, giving them a some sort of pathway or framework or something to lead the way. I live for that shit.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Just to go into the next one, when did things change, like, professionally for you? Do you remember a moment that sort of was like, okay, I can actually do this, like, and this is, like, my career, like, this is my life now? It's a vague question. It could be a very general question. It can also be that Grammy moment.
Again, I mean, there was a few moments, I guess, like, when I had left the management world to do this on my own.
Yeah.
I just felt like, I realized, like, that was my plan B. That was always my plan B. It's like, oh, if I can't, you know, be an artist, or I can't make money creatively, then I can run a label or run a management company. And I did that, or helped with that, pretty damn well. So if I can do my plan B that well, why the fuck wouldn't my plan A work out?
Yes.
Like, I hate when people ask me, like, when are you going to get a real job? I'm like, when are you? Shut up. You hate your job. Fuck you. I love this, and it keeps me going. And if I worked at a desk 9 to 5, I'd jump in front of the 501 and call it a day. Like, absolutely not.
Heads up, Queen Street.
Yeah, heads up. Cindy's on Queen Street. Watch out. Yeah. No, not actually, but
yeah,
I just couldn't do it. So I think that it was just like, I think I can. I actually just think I can. I've seen somebody else do it from the ground up. I saw Abel do it from, like, and I'm not trying to get fame to that tier. I can't do it. I want to be able to walk outside and live peacefully.
Yes.
I don't need all of that, but I watched him go from playing at the Sound Academy 3 or 4 nights in a row, like 2,000-3,000 people, to playing the Rogers Center, to, like, I was there when he won his first 2 Grammys. I was, you know, there for all of his tours where things just started elevating and growing. When he got the first placement with 50 Shades of Grey, that changed everything.
Yeah.
And watching somebody like a kid from Scarborough do that, like, he's so super talented. But it just made me realize that, like, we're all really capable if we fucking try. So.
Fantastic. For a long time, you've balanced both being a session player, but also now sort of being an artist as well.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, and it was a balance. It's always sort of been a balance. I wanted to speak to that. And I remember one conversation in your car now over a year ago, December 2022, I believe, that we had about people identifying you as being a session musician while you wanted to promote your artist project and be known as the artist.
I just feel like people didn't take it seriously.
Sorry?
I just feel like people didn't take it seriously. Like, when you, like, you know, because people have, that's a hard question to answer, I guess. Or a hard thing to talk about. I feel that I've been balancing it this whole time.
Yep.
But it was rough. There was a period where I guess I was just online showing my session musician side of things. Then when I showed them my art, it was like, cool, that's fine. What gig are you playing? What artist are you playing with next? Like, what do you, you know, or people just thought I was a bassist for a really long time because I was playing these bass gigs. And I'm like, yo, I play bass for fun. Like, I don't consider myself a bass player. Like, I'm a guitarist, but, yeah, bass is fun. And then I ended up just getting gigs on bass. And I was like, what the fuck? And I realized, you really are what people like. You can design your online life any way that you want. I'm going to be honest. I show 5% of my fucking life on the internet. Like, y'all don't know shit. It's like, it's fine. It should be that way. I don't like, I like to maintain privacy. I like to maintain a little bit of not like anonymity. It sounds like I'm saying an enemy. Anyway. Yeah. I like to have a little bit of that just because it's just for my own peace of mind. I 100%. Put myself out for perception all the time. I just like open to people's perception and judgment. And I think some things deserve to be private and special and whatever for their own things.
For sure.
So yeah, what was the initial question?
There was actually no question yet, which is fine, but I just wanted to sort of touch on that because I guess the question is, where are you at with, because at the time it felt like it was like in your heart, it felt like you were such an artist, but the people didn't really see that. And yeah. I wanted to ask you where you were with that balance and how has the transition been between now,
like the two worlds,
I guess, because you are in a way still balancing that.
Yeah.
But I tend to see you more as an artist now, which is fantastic.
Yeah. I just decided to switch it up online. I'm going to present myself as an artist. And then it's like, you could see that I play guitar and play bass. And if you want to hire me to do that, hell yeah, brother. Like, let's fucking do it. I'd rather it be like that more so than just the way it was before, just because I felt it was like I was so limited. Like I wasn't actually like creatively taken seriously. And I have so many like really twisted things to put out this year that I really want to focus on in 2023, when I was building all these assets and creating all the visuals and finishing the EP and everything, I didn't really play a lot. I actually declined a lot of gigs, not because I didn't like what the artists were doing, but just I really... like there's seasons for everything, man. Like you're not touring 24/7, 365. And if you are, you're going to take a year off or at least a few months off to go on vacation with your family and like be a human being. Yeah. You're also not in album mode all the time or writing mode all the time. Like plants can't bloom all year round. That's just not realistic. You have to spend some time underground. And I spent 2023 doing that. And I guess kind of like rejecting a lot of gigs. So maybe that definitely helped boost the artist image now.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm still out here like doing sessions and like doing guitar work for people because it's fun and that's my bag. And I'll show it when I do. Yeah. I just think this is what I want to do. I want to put out this body of work, this like 5-song EP that I've had brewing for a while and other stuff after that. I think it's just really important for me that I get it out at this time because I spent a lot of time in my like music industry journey taking care of a lot of other people's careers and making sure that they come first.
Yeah.
And you know, just when I think I'm putting me first, I end up getting sucked back into something else. And this time I said, no, I'm going to pursue this and take it seriously and prioritize it and make time for artists that I believe in when it comes to working with their music and whatever, as long as it doesn't, you know, cross a time boundary with me, you know, it doesn't take up too much of my artist time, like even relationally and in just my personal life. Mm-hmm. I've really sacrificed a lot to put this together in the way that I did. I've not neglected, but like, I guess, I've kind of like neglected my personal need to like, you know, be in a relationship or whatever it is, just because I've been dreaming of doing this my whole life. So like, I really need to give it an honest shot and like my full attention. And I'm ready to do all that other stuff. I will, but it's just not the season for that right now.
It's fantastic. So that's a lot of gems on this episode so far. So I want to thank you for that.
Hell yeah.
That's fantastic. You know, and I ask all these questions because when I craft these questions, I think about the listener and what they would want to hear and sort of your experience through that, because I feel like there's a lot of people, maybe, you know, a lot of session musicians that want to do the career, but they don't know necessarily, that they want to be, you know, the front person or, you know, lead an artist project or just have their own project, but they don't necessarily know sort of how. And, you know, I have some friends, I don't want to say it necessarily in this podcast, but I have some friends that, you know, are doing the sessions thing so much that, yes, we've had conversations about, okay, well, I want to do this other thing, but how do I do it kind of thing. So this is why I ask these questions. And
100%, it's so valuable. Being,
and candid with that. So it's great.
Thanks for offering, for having me on the show. Like, I know we're not like done or anything yet, but it's just like, I'm also grateful to be able to speak to you about these things, because I think these are a lot of universal feelings that artists have or creatives have. These are, and they were such well-crafted questions. Like, you ask really good questions. So,
oh my gosh,
thanks for giving a shit, you know, like,
hey, yeah,
you're not like reading my, you're not reading like a bio that I sent you with like three press images or something. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
I actually didn't.
It's like you gave a shit and it's kind of nice. We've only had like maybe one or two candid conversations in my car, you know, when we were doing gigs together.
Mm. And at the sandwich shop on Dundas, which I remember fondly, at the Portuguese sandwich shop.
The Portuguese, the Caldense Bakery, shout out.
There you go.
That's the one.
An upcoming sponsor of the podcast.
Yo, I need to touch the Mishta stat. So
that'd be crazy.
Yeah, if you could hook that up, that'd be sick. we only had a few of those candid conversations. So I just thought it was really nice that you like really intently thought about these questions and who's listening. I appreciate that you took the time in crafting all of this.
Oh, well, thank you for being on. you're currently promoting your signal. Why do I say that? Signal. It's my ESL self probably, but single Victim. Congrats, by the way, on the release.
Thank you.
But also your upcoming EP and the upcoming single Villain Origin Story out April 10th, everybody, which is very soon. And
heard it here first.
Yes. There you go.
That's a bit. Congratulations.
Fantastic. Okay, go pre-download, go save it, go do whatever you need to do to.
Y'all can pre-save now.
There you go, pre-save now. How has the process been? I know you've spent two and a half years on this project. How has that process been? And if we can talk about Victim, but also your upcoming.
Sure. What's funny is Villain Origin Story, again, coming out April 10th. That one is the most recent song on that's the last song that we wrote.
Right.
We wrote a lot of songs in that time, in that era, while I was going through a bunch of tumultuous shit. And I think we just picked the ones that sequentially sounded great together, and then also told the parts of the story that were important and kept the meat and potatoes. But we didn't realize was like, when we picked them and in the order we picked them, we kind of noticed it after. We're like, these are the stages of grief, like, and that was kind of something that happened after the fact. We didn't pre-plan that at all, just kind of came to be naturally. And then we decided to create the visuals like that as well. So I have a visualizer coming out for each one. We shot them all on the same day, and it was it wasn't actually as extensive as a day as I thought. I was expecting like a 14-hour day. We were there for 7 hours. It was pretty quick. We had one backdrop and then a bunch of different, every video had a different outfit, vibe, something different that I was doing that catered to whatever emotion I was trying to evoke. Yeah. So those, I have one for each song on the EP, and I'm excited to kind of roll them out. We have I guess the EP will be coming out in, I don't want to give a date yet, but like,
yeah,
like, you're like, what?
yeah.
A month or two?
Yeah.
Hella soon. And I'm just stoked also because this stuff is 2 years old. And
yes.
Transparently, I've written so much shit since.
Yeah.
And I'm like creatively in a totally different place in my brain.
Yeah.
So it kind of feels weird in a way rehashing all of these things now.
Right. And probably some emotions as well.
Yeah. I'm over it. Yeah. Like the visualizers were crazy because I was doing a lot of like method acting. Like I really embodied this, this version of me for a chunk of time, which wasn't healthy. I can't say it was healthy. It just like, it just kept stuff alive. Which needed to die. Now I'm in a totally different place creatively, and I'm excited to show you this stuff. I want the process to be a lot faster. I learned so much considering this is my first EP. Doing it over a large amount of time like that had its pros, had its cons, and I just kind of want to try something different going forward. But yeah, I don't know. It's been a really unique process in the sense that I'm also the label backing it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you're like, gonna have to wear a bunch of different hats here.
Yeah, holy crap.
Yeah.
A lot of hats, but I'm really lucky to have Alex and Mike on my team. They've really been helping me with literally everything. They also helped write the song with me, which is cool. Outside of us being a label, like we are powered by artists for artists. Like we are in service of people just like us. And we got to write the song together, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it was like, it was the last cut and it felt so raw and guttural and disgusting. And it kind of reignited that love for this music, and I just wanted everything to be heavier. And then it was funny, like I feel like after we made this super heavy record, I kind of wanted to add heavier guitars and stuff to everything else. So then it kind of enhanced the way that everything else sort of sounded too.
Sure. Like even tonally, like
because I still wanted everything to be cohesive.
Yes, yeah.
And yeah, when I brought out this really heavy sounding riff, like the riff in this thing is fucking ridiculous. I'm so excited for everyone to hear it and break their necks. Live it does that, which is so sick.
Right. Have you done these songs, some of these songs live?
I've done all of them live now.
Perfect.
And the feedback is incredible. People who've been to my shows multiple times actually know the words.
Yeah, sure.
Songs aren't out yet, and that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
And that's another one of those feel good things. To answer that question from 80 questions ago, that's another one of those feel good things that made me feel like, holy shit, you could do this.
Yeah.
That's crazy. These songs are not anywhere on Spotify or whatever, and you took up the brain space for free to learn them or to remember them. So I think we're doing something right with this record, and I think putting it out on Spooky Action Records is so special because of that. Where it's really a labor of love all the way around.
Sounds great.
And it's creepy as fuck.
I'm sure does it talk about
the anger phase?
I'm assuming, but village villain origin story. Yes, maybe the
you're about to say village ogre story, and the Shrek are coming. Don't worry, I got them online. We've been calling it, like when we were mixing this song, we were calling it village ogre story, like version 2. It's really funny. But anyways, it's like the angriest. It's about that part of your healing where you're pissed about all the time wasted. You put all this love and all this care into something or someone just for it to fucking bite you in the ass. And there's like this real visceral feeling of rage that happens. And I wanted to embody that in a record. And I feel like I did exactly that. Now the whole thing isn't like that. Cause you know, what's funny about that experience of experiencing rage like that is like there's usually a really sad, like, oh my god, like crying fucking moment that happens right after. So it's neat to be able to go into that and just capture this really broad spectrum of emotions. So I'm excited to release that and just like have people go fucking buck at a show about it with me.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Now, going into that at a show, I met you in the live sort of context, and I remember the first time, we played a show together. And all the times that I've seen you since, you always seem to sort of have a very strong character, but also through your stage performance, but also through, your clothing, your appearance, all that stuff. I just wanted to talk about characters and storytelling and, mm-hmm. Where that comes from for you. And, I just think that you're one of the strongest live performers I've seen, not only but also as a guitar player and, instrumentalist. So I just wanted to talk about that because it's always, when I think of you, I think of that. So where does that come from? I also wanted to talk about some other things after that, but starting there, just like about the live show and translating that to the live show for you.
Well, like I said before, I was raised on a lot of like Kiss and Motley Crue and stuff. So I saw the benefit of like fucking big, bad, better, like don't get mad, play the game better, But there's also a power to, and I'll speak on this in a second, but there's also a power to like just the raw nothing of someone and just showing up in jeans and a t-shirt and blowing me away and having me fucking ball my eyes out. So there's an innate power to that. And that's what I mean about like, there's more than one way to do things.
Yes.
Me, I have a lot of fun.
Yes.
Up and feeling bigger and better than I really do on the inside. I'm 5'1½". I pride myself on the half, and the boots that I wear, those fucking Gene Simmons inspired things, like they make me feel huge, and it really helps bring the presence out. And it's not about overpowering other people, it's also it's about inspiring people to be bigger versions of themselves. Like, you are so much bigger than your little meat sack that you're walking around in, and we have so much light and like and creativity and love to give and share. At least I do, and I think other people have that too. So being able to inspire that through crazy manic online and live behavior, that's my bag. It's just fun, man. It's fun. Like, people ask me all the time, do you get stage fright? No, I don't. I get stage fright talking to people one-on-one. Not you, you're sick. But like, when you're in a random social setting and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm saying right now. Do I talk about the weather? Like, I don't know how to do that.
We're talking about what? What were you going to say?
Like the weather. Like the,
you said Letterman. I was like, holy fuck. Like,
we can talk about Letterman. So like, there's that. And then, but when you're on a stage, you're singing live on a platform. Someone gave you a microphone. Like, you have power. Someone gave you the fucking tools. So why would I have stage fright? I'm like, I have the tools. I feel it reinforced. By my big boots and my stupid clothes and my dumb shit. Like, it. Well,
the first time we met, you had Lego in your hair.
I did have Lego in my hair. That was for my smoking cigarettes video. That was like the craziest hair I've ever done. That was so fun. Also like so time consuming to keep
I'm
up.
Sure.
So,
I'm
like
sure.
That's another thing. Like, I want to be able to like hit the stage and like feel comfy and doing all that stuff before the show. There was a point where it felt like ritualistic and calming and like just like a fun thing, like, play dress up before your show. But then it started to feel a little bit taxing and stressful at one point. So I had to like dial back, and I'm really happy I have like a shag now, and I just kind of wake up, show up. That's the thing. And I can like headbang with it, and it's dope. So I have to find that balance between like what looks good, feels cool, makes me feel confident. What's also easy to put together. Because also maintaining this look or appearance or whatever online, imagine having to fucking dress like that, like a fucking super goth mommy, like every day on the internet. Like, even the goth mommies don't want to do that. Like,
that's my next step, by the way.
Yeah, you should becoming honestly. A goth mommy.
Yeah.
Totally. It's fun, but it's not sustainable to like do all that shit every day. It is really time consuming. Sometimes I want to walk around with a bun and no makeup on and like a shitty t-shirt and whatever, because like that's how I create looking like a fucking gremlin. So yeah, I don't know, it's like it definitely serves a purpose, and it's also just fun. I don't want to wear boring stuff. Like, I'm 32 and this is the only place you'll ever hear me say that, and people dress like 32 year olds. Like, people around me dress like they're, and it's like, sure, it sucks and you look boring and I don't want to talk to you. but when I see someone who like really just goes the extra mile for themselves, I want to create conversation with you. And more often than not, it ends up becoming really inspiring conversation and I learn something. And I don't know, I just follow my heart in that regard. Like, just I just want to feel good, and it's going to attract other things that feel good, and vice versa.
Fantastic. To end this segment, any tips for people that have a hard time with self-expression? Big question. But, you know, again, I'm just thinking.
It's easier if you got bullied. I was bullied a lot as a kid. I barely had, like, sure, friends. And so I feel like that was one of those fail faster kind of moments. Like,
yeah,
I made it. I'm alive. If people want to make fun of me now.
Sorry. The thumbs up thing that you have on your, it's the Apple thing that's new.
Oh, the little Apple.
Yeah, the Apple thumbs up thing.
It just
came in at the perfect time.
I want to look at it.
It's like big bullied stuff. It's like that.
Yeah, it's just like up. Get bullied.
Sure.
It's easier when you have gotten bullied, but I feel like if you focus solely on your perception and how you look, people are going to like you less. Just like, be yourself and who cares? And it's just going to attract, being that version of yourself cuts a lot of time, because you end up aligning with people who want that version of you instead of you playing pretend to a version that's not really you. So you're actually just saving yourself a lot of time. And yeah, who gives a shit? Everyone's going to bully you. Everyone's going to talk about you. Like, it's your life. On my deathbed, I want to know that I dressed fucking cool and I did cool shit and I hung out with cool people and I was a nice person. And that's all I give a shit about.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Topic three here. I remember another conversation that we had in your car. Coming back from rehearsal, I spoke to you actually. It was probably in that same, maybe another drive. But it was about me wanting to do a podcast. Now we're over a year later and we're now,
you were just exploring the idea. I think I remember this one.
Yes. I was exploring the idea of doing a podcast, and you know, at the time I said, love to have you on. And now we're, you know, over a year later, and we're at episode 60 with you, which is great. It's like a
sort that's of- crazy. I wish it was episode 69, because that would have been fun.
Yeah, we'll have you back on in a couple months.
Just like a little cameo, just so I can come up on the screen and do this and have the thumbs up guy do it back at me. Come on. Yeah.
That would be sick. Let's actually do that.
Yes.
For please. A recall.
I would fucking love that.
That'd be hilarious. I remember, like, you know, I remember talking about doing a podcast, and you, and like a lot of people, like before I asked them to actually be on a podcast, you were like, but like, I don't know what I would talk about and stuff. But eventually you looked at me and you said, that you'd have a lot to say about being a woman in the industry and that you could talk forever about that. And your experience through that lens. And I, you know, I think it's very important to talk about. I, of course, don't have a lot to say being a white cisgendered man. And I haven't necessarily lived through that experience, of course. But I just wanted to sort of open up the floor to your thoughts about it. Just, you know, again, because, you know, it's so important to talk about.
Well, first of all, I think you are valuable in the sense that right now in the meta of it, you are providing a platform for someone like myself to be able to speak about my experience. And so you are helping drive the culture to a broader understanding of the dynamics between men and women in the music industry.
Yeah.
I guess I want to start with saying I work with so many wonderful men. I work with two awesome people on my label side. Tampa, who is a husband and a father of a beautiful little girl, and Jake, who is a fucking awesome right hand on guitar, awesome artist himself. I work with many wonderful men who let me be myself and let my voice be heard, and they do exist. Plenty of them exist. There are times where I guess my struggles have to do with like speaking up in the way that I'm perceived upon speaking up. So if someone has an issue, usually if a man expresses himself, I think we should do it this way, or I don't know if this is going to work, in whatever it may be. Maybe it's a rehearsal, maybe it's like trying out a different part in a song, or maybe it's a release plan and deciding what the better plan of action is. The man will have his perspective, and then I'm not trying to rebuttal or anything like that. I just like have a different idea or a different understanding based on my own lived experience, and I share it. And I'm met with either, yeah, but my opinion matters a little bit more because I came up with it, or like as the man saying it, or I'm met with, why do you feel like that? That's a little curt. That's a little short. That's a little, like, you delivered that message a little, you know, bluntly. Was I really being that like overtly blunt, or did I just not decorate the language for you in the way that you're used to women decorating language for you so that you don't get your little feelings hurt and punch a wall?
Yes.
I could be, yeah, it could be the same message. And then I've also worked with men where, this is kind of funny. This is also, I'm going to put you on a big secret of business. The best way to get someone to do what you want is make it look like it's their idea.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
That works everywhere. And it works. Yep. I'm really like just pulling the curtain back here, but it works with men a lot. They need to feel like it's their idea, like they're leading, like they're whatever. And what's funny is a lot of women just like, they do want to get from point A to B. So they cater to the experience. They cater to the, like, the nice flowery language that helps them, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's not helpful, though, in the long run. It's not. Like, sure. I feel like we need to rip Band-Aids. And there's more than one way to be a woman. There's more than one way to be a man. There's no definition or a non-binary person or like whatever. It doesn't really matter. There's more than one way to be a person. There is a broad spectrum of what that looks like.
Yep.
And I think we do need to rip the Band-Aid and assert the place of a confident woman in business as just a confident woman and not someone who is mean or just outwardly like defiant or, you know, that person who's just always giving the benefit of the doubt or whatever and not really just like going with the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about that sometimes. Yeah. Like we have opinions too, and we share them. And like, I just want to be considered.
Yes.
Conversations. I just want to be thought of, and not thought of as like a side character or someone's right hand or whatever, like thought of, you know, really, really intently thought of. I hope that makes sense. That was a lot of
junk. 100%.
Okay, cool.
Of course it does. I think it's, you know, it's unfortunate to hear, but yes, I see that a lot of the frustration could be coming from just like the consideration aspect, as you see, as you're talking about, you know.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that one person or the other is always right. It's about being considered and the voice being heard.
It doesn't mean I'm right. Like, just because I'm saying something doesn't mean it's the right answer. It's just my perspective. And I just want that perspective to be heard out without like someone else's bias because they think they're right or they're used to being the leader or whatever. Like,
yeah.
And it's for more than just women. It's for,
yes. Yes. Like, of course.
It's like different cultures as well. I read something years ago that like blew my mind. It was this, company, that was making cars that drive themselves. And it was like a Korean company or something like that. And they had a blind spot. And when they were testing cars, they realized that these cars only hit or like only prevented hitting certain color skin types because they did not consider darker colored skin or like other ethnicities outside of like white or fair skinned.
Oh, wow.
And that's really dangerous. And that was just straight up because they were not looking at a cultural perspective outside of their own.
Yes.
And that becomes dangerous.
Yeah.
That's just in the tech field, but these nuances exist everywhere. And that's why it's really important that people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, people from different cultural backgrounds, people from different like different genders and life experiences all get a voice.
Yes.
Because then we just have a better understanding, like just evolution works like that. Like we just need to evolve better because it's just going to make everyone's process easier, creatively, business-wise, whatever. The more people we could speak to and the more people that feel heard, I don't know, the sooner we'll survive this weird spinning rock.
Yeah. And like you said, like there are literally some health and safety concerns that could come about.
Yeah. If you don't listen to voices. Yes. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. You know, this is, I hate this question because I don't necessarily think it's an industry-wide question, but mm-hmm. I'm going to ask it anyway. I don't mean it to be like this, but what can the industry do better? I hate the question, but it's like, you know, I don't know, or maybe it's not that. Maybe it's like in a perfect world. And honestly, we can also just move on. Do you know what I'm trying to?
Yeah. I'm trying
to, you know, provide a solution, but the solution might not be there, and we also might not have the answer as well. You know.
I don't know how well this answer is going to be received.
Yeah.
But sometimes I also feel like in the music industry, they pander to like it's like some people like it's like, oh, we need to get a woman's voice on this thing just so that we have the stamp of the women's. We need to get we need to have a black person on this thing just so that we look diverse. Yeah.
The quota thing.
Yeah, yes. It's like this quota meeting thing. That's exactly the perfect way to put it.
Yeah.
It's evident that it's performative.
It sucks.
It shows.
Yeah.
It's gross. And you can tell which companies actually pride themselves on, I guess, showcasing different voices and different perspectives. And the companies who are just doing it to save their ass on paper and in public. And so I just feel like I don't know how to make that stop, though. I genuinely don't, because it comes with a really big sense of self-awareness.
Yes.
And a lot of these, like, big white guys in the boys club have to actually sit down and have that meeting with themselves about how, like, what is the purpose of inclusion for them? Is it to save their ass or?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so no, totally.
That's my answer to that question.
I think it's interesting. And this might be sort of a weird take on it, but I'm going through the process of thinking about it as we speak here. But it's like the quota thing has to be in place because that's sort of like the starting point. Because, well, I think I'm sort of just talking out loud here. But it's in the fact where it's like, we got to start somewhere, because if it didn't start there, it wouldn't start at all, kind of thing.
Right.
It's like,
as long as we get to the point where it becomes, it just needs to be less performative. It's just
exactly.
It's just like.
It needs to become like obsolete. Like the quota shouldn't be there, but it has to be there to become a thing. It's like a weird sort of first step.
Yeah,
this might just be my perspective on it, and you know, I'm aware of that.
Yeah,
but it's sort of like it has to be there, even though it's cringe.
Yeah. Also, just like, just blindly giving a platform to to whatever, just because like this person identifies as, you know, not cis heteronormative, or just providing a platform, because like, not because the art is good. I think it's important to still highlight like good art or the best, yes, like the best of stuff, regardless of gender or any of that kind of stuff. I think it's still important to show that. It's and also eliminating the bias that makes those decisions, because like people make those decisions, cultures make those decisions about what's really good and what's not.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily think it's the Junos or the Grammys or anything like that, because that is, those are institutions that you pay into to have an opinion, and your background, financially or socioeconomically, directly influences being able to actually purchase that membership. And
oh, 100%.
You know what I mean?
There's, it's barriers, like, it's like barriers.
There's, yeah, there's trickle, yeah, like a trickle effect of all that, right? So yeah. That's why I don't think that those, and excuse me for saying that, Grammys and Junos. But
Juno's live tonight on,
on
CBC.
Sorry. They're cool accolades to receive. I'd be honored to one day receive something like that. But it's not the end all be all. And we need to focus on actually like art that's good and stuff that's genuinely good, not because it looks good on paper or makes your company look like they're inclusive.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. I think it's the right time to ask this question, just, you know, because of sort of, we're talking about where, you know, art and stuff like that, and, you know, what you deem as sort of important. What are you looking forward to right now, and what's your dream?
What I'm looking forward to, right? I want to play shows again, man. We had chatted about this a little earlier. I've been so in like office mode, in,
yes,
like making stuff mode, in the secrets and the confines of my woman cave, and I'm fucking done. I want to go and like mosh in a crowd. I want to jump in and sing at someone's face and feel the salt in their sweat. Like I miss it so much. I did emo night the other night at Sneaky D's.
Yeah, yeah.
I got up on stage and sang A Day to Remember, and it was so sick, and it felt so good. It's been 6 months, and again, I did that on purpose. I just stopped playing because I needed to just like get back in studio, finish my stuff. It costs money, takes time. So I wanted to get that all out of the way and come back when my EP's out. So like, once this EP's out, it's on, brothers. Like, we are performing. My dream right now is I just want to get on a bigger bill. I just want to open for acts that make sense. I want to reach more people and have more fun live and create these moments that I'll remember for the rest of my life, that other people will remember as like, you know, one of the cool things that happened at one of the concerts that they went to. I don't know. That's what I miss. And that's my goal outside of this, is to be able to tour.
Yeah. Fantastic. I hear about, specifically for Toronto artists, but it seems like, yes, the local venues is all great and stuff, but it feels like the door opening, or the next opportunity that a lot of people are looking for, specifically in Toronto, is opening for other people, in regards to, you know, bigger acts, but just on the opening slot or bill or whatever.
It's the best way to, yes, to grow your fan base. Like, full disclosure, that's just what it is. It has to make sense. You can't just hop on any bill.
Yeah.
But it's the fastest way to reach someone else. I can't tell you how many shows I've been to as a kid where I saw Paramore at the Cool House in like in high school.
Sure. Yeah.
That was the shit, with the original members, both the Farrow brothers, like, and this band Paper Route opened up for them. And yeah, I would have never heard of them outside of that. I guess times are different now. We have like the internet that's like a lot more prominent. It was a thing, but it wasn't back then. So that was my only way of figuring out what I liked and learning about a band live. I love when people learn about me live and not on the record, because they get to really experience the full scope of it all, you know?
Yeah.
And so being able to offer that opportunity to other people is, it's cool. It's like the best way to discovering new music, in my opinion.
You just spoke a few seconds ago about wanting the audience to discover your live, sort of aspect of your artist project, because, you know, it's such a great way to be introduced. And this is just a quick question, but do you think that you create recorded music to perform live, as a business card, as a calling card, or is it just all a part of just like one thing, or is it the opposite? You want to perform live for people to go check out your recorded music.
Good question. I like this one. I have made records for different purposes.
Yeah.
But now, in the current place that I'm in creatively, I definitely write considering the live moments.
Yes.
Interesting. I think it's so important.
Do you think it's genre based? Just a quick, do you think it's like?
Sometimes. But also, I feel like the best songs, you can strip them down and play them acoustically. Yes. Or you can beef them up and do whatever, put them behind anything, like an EDM track, a string section, a jazz band. Like the best songs can go through all of that. So it doesn't really matter. But I'm definitely more mindful of it now, especially in like the hard rock, shoegaze, those kind of genres. I feel like it's very about the feeling that it evokes in person and what it does to your body.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and playing to that is more beneficial than me trying to write a song that has like a TikTok moment. I've been in sessions where people are like, "Oh my god, that's gonna be like a moment in TikTok or whatever." I even said it before. I'm gonna bait myself out like that. Where I'm like, oh, this is like such a TikTokable moment. And I'm like, wait, who gives a fuck? I want to be able to play this live. And does it hit? Sick. If it doesn't, scrap it. Next idea.
Fantastic. Just want to basically conclude this episode with a game that we do on this podcast. For those who are listening for the first time, this week it's the Dream Fest game. Basically, for those who don't know what the Dream Fest game is, I always ask my guest to basically program an evening of their dream festival. And this week, I ask Cindy to basically come up with their own festival, aka a headliner, two openers, where this festival would happen, when it would happen, as in sort of at what time in the year, how many people can go, as in the attendance. A food item or a beverage that would basically represent them. And for Cindy specifically, I would ask you, how would you stamp your name on this event if you were their creative director or label head?
So am I the creative director? Like, okay, no, never mind. I can do anything I want. I'm the creative director. I was going to ask, like, what are my limitations here? No.
No limitations. I just wanted to have the Cindy sort of stamp of creative stamp on this festival. So we're sort of going. I don't know if you have this written down or anything like that, or just
no. I'm going on the fly here.
So I don't know where you want to start, but do you want to start?
Okay, let's just map out like some logistics here. So, I've worked Coachella several times. I really like the tennis grounds or the wherever, like it's like 108-acre polo field or something. Okay. It's so sick because I feel like no matter how far you walk, you'll never see the end of it.
Yeah.
I feel like my dream festival was already created this year. They did like the When We Were Young Fest in Vegas.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Like, I can't top that. That's crazy. But
actually,
yes,
just came out yesterday. But did you see that they're doing at Oromodonte? They're doing an emo festival.
No.
Yeah, you need to know this. This is like I did not plan it like this, but you know where they do like Boots and Hearts and where they used to do
Yeah.
festival? They're doing an emo festival in
Have bands
August.
been announced yet?
No, but they just announced it yesterday, and you're probably gonna trip balls.
Oh shit. Okay,
Like
okay.
we
Whoa.
are, yeah, when we were young. It's
Oh my
like
God.
it's
Okay.
huge. Yeah. Sorry.
Sick, 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 sick.
Sorry, sorry.
So yeah, we're getting there. That's dope. Pretty much
Yeah.
at like the Coachella grounds. I
Yeah.
love burgers. I love all different types of burgers. So I feel like there would have to be many different types there for sale. Also tater tots,
Okay. And also, what,
not
sorry?
fries. And tater tots,
Oh
not
yeah.
fries.
Of a tater tot.
I love a tater tot. When those things are like crisped to perfection,
Yeah.
so fucking good. Anyway, so that's the food.
Yeah.
Headliner, Green Day, obviously.
Sure, yeah.
Opening act, me,
Yeah.
obviously. What's the caveat? We have to play together. So sick. I'm just a big piece of shit. I'm just using it for my own personal gain.
That's fantastic.
Anyway, no, yeah, it would be Green Day for sure. Weezer. I
Oh
would
yeah.
basically take the Hella, remember the Hella Mega Tour that was supposed to happen over COVID that I had tickets to and then they canceled? It was like Green Day, Fall Out Boy, and Weezer. Are you
That's
kidding me?
crazy.
What a fire lineup. And they canceled that and they brought Green Day back with Rancid, which, like, okay, I'm a Rancid fan, but like, really, you guys?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I would have that.
Yep.
What were the other questions? What time of year? Probably like July or something,
Okay,
July or
so like
August.
warm.
Warm. I want heat, but maybe not too heat. Maybe like,
But we're talking evening here, right? So it's not like it's not crazy.
yeah. But
Yeah,
it
yeah.
could be daytime. It could
Could
be
be
afternoon. It could be, like the old Warped,
sure.
I'd get there anywhere between 11 and, well, I think the first band started playing at like 11 or something, but it was like small stage shit.
Nuts.
Yeah, but like whatever, early afternoon could work too.
Okay.
What are the other criteria?
And I mean, where would it be in Coachella Valley?
Yeah, like in the at that polo field. That place is so sick, just
Yeah.
for the vibes.
And then your stamp on the event, as in like what would you change to Green Day, or how would you like put your own like creative like signature on, let's say, like the Green Day show? Are they all wearing huge platform boots? Or do they all have Lego in their
Oh, that'd be so funny. Like
hair?
maybe it's all these like pop punk emo bands doing like another genre of music,
Oh, sick.
in their own style, or like singing R&B songs, like 2000s R&B songs, but like in like pop punk style or something like that. I think that would be fire because it would also bring a lot of fans of, or like, I don't know, like Katy Perry or something, like, or like whatever. Like, it would also bring like random of those fans over to the show.
Green
I
Day
gotta think
Destiny,
about this. I really do. This is a great question.
No, that's great.
But yeah, I would play with them. That's the caveat. That's like, sorry guys. Oh, we gotta share a dressing room. That's crazy. What kind of rules are these?
Yeah. Big stage, small dressing rooms.
100%.
Fantastic. Well, that's how we conclude the podcast. Thanks so much for coming on and giving me so much of your time, being generous with your answers and stuff like that. It was so insightful to learn a little bit more about you. As you said, we've only had a few discussions, you know, in your car, rehearsals and stuff like that. So it's fantastic.
Thanks
Really
for having me,
fantastic.
man. This has been a lovely conversation. I feel like I also learned some stuff about myself. Like, I can't talk.
Sure.
So media training, hello. No, seriously, thanks so much for having me and offering me a chance to talk about these things that I only really get to speak on with my inner circle. It's nice to be able to share that with the public, and give them a little bit of an insight as to how we do this crazy shit, why we do this crazy shit, and why we're gonna keep going.
Fantastic. Well, people listening, make sure to check out her socials at I Am Cindy for all artist stuff. And go pre-save the new single Villain Origin Story today.
Yeah.
It's out on April 10th. So go check that out. And the upcoming EP that will be released in the next couple months, apparently, whatever that
Yes,
means.
let's get feral, brothers. I'm down. I'm ready. Let's pre-save and let's party.
Fantastic. I also want to thank those who have been listening. This is the 60th episode. It's crazy to say 60 episodes of the Cloud Machine podcast. Thanks for listening, watching since the beginning, or if it's your first one, please stick around. Basically, our goal is to share things that are going on in the music industry. Topics and stuff, but also the people that are really in the industry and actually really doing it. And not only artists and musicians on stage, but people that are behind the scenes. We have tour managers on, we have photographers, we have lighting operators, we have designers, we have a whole bunch of things like that. So please keep updated, do whatever you got to do, like, comment, subscribe, do the whole thing. Thanks, Cindy, for doing this. And people, as always, stay safe, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Balloons. Was that supposed to happen?
It's the whole Apple thing.
Oh, that happened at the end too?